You're listening to That Great Manc Pod, Greater Manchester's community podcast. Top 100.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of That Great Manc Pod. This is a very special episode, part of the Manc Spirit Arwigan Festival. Damien and I chat with Petro and Sheena from the Writington Wigan and Lee NHS. Sheena is a critical care matron, and Petro, although she is now officially a clinical informatics manager, is also a massively experienced ICU nurse who went back into ICU at the start of the pandemic. Petro is also an amazing photographer and took loads of really powerful photos inside ICU during the pandemic. These pics have been shared on the WWL social feed, and Manc Spirit have been sharing them on their social feed during the festival. They give a really intimate portrait of life for the staff during this difficult time. In parts, this is a hard listen, as you can imagine, but the humanity and positivity of the whole ICU team shines through. Thank you for everything you have done and continue to do for us. Thank you. Anyway, it's I know this is short notice, but it's how we do things. It's great to have you on. It's going really well actually so far this week with the festival. They're always slow to start, to the point where you're thinking, oh, what's the point? And then you think, hang on a minute, we've been commissioned to do this, so we can't just walk away. But then it picks up, and then everyone kind of realizes that the point of it is, you know, it's not just two Manx getting involved in Wigan's business. All we're trying to do is just facilitate people just sharing all the really, really good things that are happening in this case, in the borough of Wigan and Lee.
Yeah.
I've said that a few times.
Don't forget
as well.
Lee. Don't forget Lee.
And then people start kind of thinking, oh, okay then, and sharing and stuff. So it's going really well. And obviously the stuff with yourselves as we would hope, has been getting some really, really good reactions, as it should. But you know, I'll be blunt with you, and we're always pretty blunt. I mean, our attitude has always been that, you know, once things start getting back to normal, people have got such short memories, and you can probably answer that much better than me. And it's really, really, I mean, it really pisses me off.
And so
I can't imagine how you guys must feel. But you know, it seems to be the same old story. You know, you just do your job and you just do it. People just kind of go and move on to the next thing. But we're not, you know, as a charity, as individuals, let alone a charity, but as a charity, you know, we're not going to let that happen. We're certainly going to do what we can to keep all the people who did really, really good things all the time, but certainly during the last 12 months is to keep them front and center and do what we can to support them. So can you... I'm recording this now, and it records the images, and but it's the audio that we want. But generally, I just release like, you know, 20 seconds worth of video just as a teaser.
Usually the bits where someone smiles, they're 20 seconds of smiles rather than the rest of the interview.
20 seconds of smile. Most of the stuff we'll have to be really well behaved because most of the stuff we can never put on.
That's reassuring, I have to say. That's reassuring.
Oh, no, for various reasons. But it's
plenty in the editing bin. or a secret file that me and Paul keep for when everything goes tits up and we decide to release it all.
Destruction day. I mean, we always say, you know, we like to think that, I mean, you know, we're quite vocal, and we say like, we're going to say whatever we want, and you know, no one's going to stop us, and if it's, you know, blind, and you say that, and then sometimes when you listen back on the edit, you think, I can't put that in. either my mum won't speak to me.
Well, I promise the comms and PR team that we'll behave ourselves today. No, nothing political, nothing that'll have the trust sweating.
Listen, all I... The big thing for me personally today is just I'm more interested in about you guys as much as what you've been doing and what you've done. Because I think, again, that's where certainly, you know, when people are just seeing people behind masks, again, they just forget that they're just human beings like the rest of us. So it's kind of reminding people about that as well. So would you mind, sorry, like I was saying, yeah, so I'm recording. So we won't put anything in. We never put anything in that's going to cause anybody any issues. Not that I'm saying you're going to say anything like that. And it's normally us. So don't be worried about that. As much as we haven't got careers to think about, you guys have. So it's not something we do. But could you, and if we can start with you, Petro, can you just give us a brief idea of obviously who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So my name probably gives it away that I'm not from Britain originally. So I'm born and bred South African, and we immigrated in 99. So yeah, nearly lived longer here now than I lived in worked in South Africa, certainly. So yeah, my background's always been a nurse. I think it's now 34 years this year that I've been a nurse. And then about 5 years ago now, I think it is, I changed my career to what we call as go over to the dark side and joined the IMNT team. So I'm not clinical as such anymore until COVID hit us. So, yeah, I've worked about 15 years in ICU in Wigan. And then an opportunity came basically to have a new clinical system in the unit, and the old legacy system was basically at the end of life. So we had to buy a new system. So kind of volunteered foolishly and then went on a year secondment and joined the IMNT team. Right. And basically, yeah, opened the whole new world for me. And I became the first clinical informatics nurse of WWL. So then I permanently left ICU. Right. I've always obviously been in contact. You know, me and Sheena has been friends since forever, it feels now. So, yeah, always been in contact with the guys, you know, and pop up and say hello and things like that. And been very involved from an IT point of view. So I then went on and became the clinical informatics manager. So I've got a whole team of clinicians that work on the digital side, if you like. So everything that we do and try to get rid of paper and put everything digital. So when COVID hit, a lot of people have been redeployed. So I went back naturally to ICU. So yeah, it was quite the journey. being on the other side as well, it was kind of just being thrown back into it and head down and just get on with it. So, yeah, I think me and Sheena had quite different experiences through COVID because obviously Sheena became matron. Well, she will tell you everything. So total different, you know, what we went through because I was literally on the shop floor doing what I needed to do and looking after patients as such, where Sheena was more in the background of organizing everything and keep the unit a run, if you like. So, yeah, and that's it in a short, really.
Did you ever think you would end up back in ICU?
No, never, to be honest. If I wanted to go and do, you know, shifts or anything like that, I could have. But to be honest, I've never had, you know, because we still registered. So I'm still a registered nurse and everything else to do my role. But no, I didn't, never envisage anything what it does. No.
Well, in the nicest possible way, I hope you never have to go back again.
yeah.
But yeah, no, that's really interesting. I mean, 99 is not, I don't know, you kind of look at it, don't you? 1999, that wasn't that long ago, but it was 20.
I know.
21 years.
You're showing your age now, Paul.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure my age is more ways than one, mate, believe me.
Lifetime.
Sheena, can you do the same for us? Can you just give us an idea of what you do?
Yeah, so I'm Sheena and I'm I'm the matron on ICU at Wigan. So I've been a nurse for 25 years and I've worked on the unit at Wigan for 20 years, 21 years nearly. So I started as a junior nurse, registered nurse. I had worked in West Suffolk Hospital for a couple of years before that, but I've only ever worked in ICU. I don't really know any other kind of nursing. So, you know, ICU is my passion. So, yeah, I came to Wigan in, I think it was 2001 or 2000, I can't remember. It was a long time ago. And, I was sort of worked my way up into a, well, the most probably senior position that you can have within an ICU. And I sort of went into that post, I think it was 12 or 18 months pre-pandemic. So
right.
I sort of consider myself quite junior in the role, although I know the unit inside out, back to front and in every direction, and I know everybody on the unit very well because we are quite a small unit in comparison to other units across Greater Manchester. So, so me and Petro actually met working in ICU on that unit. Petro actually used to be my manager, interestingly. Didn't you, Petro?
Good old days.
Yeah, the good old days, that's, you know, professionally, that's my history, intensive care. I don't really know anything else, to be honest, but sort of what happened last year opened my eyes to other aspects of healthcare and pressures everywhere. And to have Petro, but Petro was one of a number of returning ICU nurses, and we had quite a lot of the old team back, and never did we ever imagine that would ever happen. With all the planning in the world, and you plan for scenarios, I don't think we'd ever planned for something so extreme.
No, I don't. Well, listening to what's going on today and not getting political, I don't think a lot of people did.
No. So it was, there was a lot of learning as we went. So I was very much in the background. You know, do you know what? I was just a facilitator of things, of being responsive, being reactive. And being the voice of the team, that was my primary role.
I'm looking after them, though. I would say.
Exactly. I was going to say, there's no such. We don't do just. We don't use that word in any.
Just, yes.
You know, everybody. What's come from the photos that we've seen and the fantastic is at what a great team you've got. You know, and how you 100%. Also the comments in the that have come in from different people. It just shines through that you've got that real strong bond between you all. So, Sheena, I'm not accepting just because.
Yeah, but listen, you have to remember, I'm a nurse. This is how we talk. This is what we do, you know.
But you think it's just your job, isn't it? Everybody kind of, I think in the beginning when it was like, you know, clapping and it's your heroes and you're all that, we don't think like that. No. It's like, that's what we do. And it is our passion as ICU nurses, I think, because you just get on with it. You know, but the camaraderie and the, it was something else. And we could have not done any of this without each other. I think, you know, we're just small cogs in a massive big wheel.
Absolutely. But Petro, we've always had that camaraderie. And because of the unit and the size of our unit, we all know each other so well, you know, not just professionally, personally, you know, it's cliche. I'm sorry. It is like one big family. I'm sorry. But it is. And we've always had the camaraderie and that link and that supporting network. But it was off the scale. It just went off the scale.
It's total testament that you put the call out, you know, to people that used to work there and people like Petro turned up, you know, and they could have easily, everybody could have gone, no, sod that. This is pretty bad. I'm not getting involved in this, but for you to put the call out and for people to respond, I think that, again, that's a real testament to the team you've got there and you for pulling that together. I mean, I have a bit of an insight into the structures within NHS because my partner is a ward manager in Macclesfield Hospital. So, you know, I know what it's like for the matron being sort of that level below the trust, but also, you know, in that decision-making position and having to pull it all together.
Just to clarify for me, were you asked if you wanted to go back or were you told that you were going back because they needed you? Was it? Did you? Did you have to volunteer?
It was a bit of both. Yeah. Because you know, if you just to give you a bit of context, we doubled our capacity. We didn't double the amount of nurses we had. We were doubling capacity because we had to, you know, we were getting patients, as was every other ICU, every, you know, wards. We've never seen anything like it. So, you know, we had to dilute our ratios and we just needed anybody with ICU experience, if possible. It wasn't always the case. Some people weren't able to return for whatever reason. But on the whole, we had a bulk of staff who did return, and not only did Petro and other ex-ICU nurses return once, they went actually back to the roles in summer briefly and then came back again in September. So was it 9 out of 12 months, Petro, you worked on ICU?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Just went back now in April again, didn't it? So it was literally nearly a year.
At its worst, how many beds were you looking after then in ICU?
As in one nurse?
No, sorry, as in the amount of people that you had actually had in there that you were looking after.
Well, we had a limit to our capacity.
Right.
So we were full at double capacity
all the time.
What I was here, I mean, Kate had come home every other night and say, oh, another ward's been added now. Another ward has become a COVID ward. So ICU was the hub, you know, where at the middle of it, but then they were just adding more. I mean, she runs a dementia ward and that was turned into a COVID ward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the people that were on there, I don't know, I'm just saying, usually you'd have people coming in for, say, orthopaedics for having the knees or ankles done. That wasn't an orthopaedic ward anymore. They'd all been shipped out. And that had been turned into a COVID ward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that happened everywhere, didn't it? It was just, it's like Sheena say, and I think as well that the intensive care beds in Wigan is 7, but there's 11 beds altogether. But the 4 other beds are normally high dependency beds. But we didn't have high dependency. They turned all into intensive care beds. So some of the patients that you would normally have as high dependency, that's not ventilated. They were on the wards and being looked after ward staff. That's quite commendable because they have never had to do that with support, but very, you know, very commendable because, again, that's never happened in the history.
See, my thinking on this, and I'm no expert, but seeing it from other, when other things have happened, it's like, you know, all the young kids who are coming back from serving in Afghanistan, that, you know, we see issues now, but you know, in 5-10 years, we'll really see what kind of issues we've had by sending those young kids over there, and they've seen what they've seen. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason to believe it isn't going to be the same in your environment. And it's how that is dealt with. Hopefully it is being dealt as much as they can being dealt with and supported. I mean, that's the big concern for me, is that you're being, I mean, the clapping was great. I get that. But I know people towards the end was going, oh, just leave it. You know, just let us do what we're doing. We're doing our job. But it's knowing that support is there for you guys now.
Well, the PTSD and the trauma and the thing, it's only probably just starting to show itself.
Yeah. I was going to say the last 12 months have been difficult for everybody patient facing, but it's almost the difficulties are starting to show now with staff. We're in this period of
transition in a way.
Yeah, it's difficult, and the stopping and thinking is probably the hardest part to some degree. There is a huge emphasis on psychological wellbeing for staff, to support staff. There's lots of rollouts of different services, different services we can signpost to, services. We have
wellbeing team, haven't we?
Yeah, we have a wellbeing team in the organisation who, to be honest, you know, I made contact with them last February when I knew what was coming to ICU, but didn't really know, but I thought something terrible was going to happen. I hope it's not as bad as what we've seen. Over in Italy, but you know what, it might be. So I was sort of trying to prepare for the incoming, whatever it was going to be, I contacted one of a colleague in the sexual wellness team and said, I think something terrible is going to happen and I think we might need you. So,
do you know what? I bet it was as scary for them because they don't expect that. And again, I'm sure, you know, that they will really struggle in terms of rolling stuff out and they'll be struggling themselves. I mean, everyone's struggling.
Yes.
But for different reasons. And, you know, I'd get annoyed, you know, when you go in, when it first, you know, when the shelves were empty and, you know, that was annoying to me. And then you see pictures later on of nurses finishing the shift and going in to empty shelves. And that would really, really, really make me angry.
Yeah.
You know, really angry. And you're just thinking, well, nothing I can do about it. Mm-hmm. Really. So, but it's, and it kind of, you know, and then it just builds and builds and builds and everyone's like that. But then, you know, you're having to, I don't know, you know, you're having to go to work and kind of work through it where lots of people were just at home or in the garden drinking gin.
Yeah, of course it was good weather, at least last
week. Lovely weather, yeah.
Well, we said this in the first lockdown. I really enjoyed it. Not for the sitting in the garden drinking gin. It was just, you know, it was a chance for a reset and you know, more people were smiling, which was dead. I mean, I'm sure they weren't, you know, where you were, but generally more people were smiling, being nicer to each other and just being more human.
Mm-hmm.
And that's then basic. You see the pictures of Italy, which was one of the most frightening things I've ever seen. That kind of dread, wasn't it? It was like there's something really, really bad going to happen. Yeah. So I'll probably keep saying it. So I can only imagine what that must have been like for you guys. But what kind of things did you do to keep your spirits up that you can tell us about and not lose your job?
Gin. just the odd glass, you know.
I don't think anyone would. No judge had sent you down. But I mean, that must have been, you know. I mean, I've not been drinking this year, but certainly during lockdown, I found myself drinking more, and so I'm sure
I started making it.
What?
I said I started making it. I went another step further.
Yeah. Wow. Always got to get one better. I mean, he started his own brewery in his shed. You don't want to drink it. You would end up in ICU if you drank it. Oh dear. Yeah. So what kind of things did you do just to kind of, you know, just to get a smile out of somebody? And I mean, you can see in those pictures, Petro, you can see the smiles, and not everybody's smiling for the camera. You can see them smiling and the hugging.
I think loads of them, when I was like, very unfortunately, the photos only started in the second wave. The first wave was that overwhelming, and all along, because I'm a bit sad like that, every time I see something, wherever I am, I see a photo. So there's always a photo opportunity. You know, my eyes are literally, this sounds a bit cliche as well, but I literally see a photo everywhere of anything. And when this all started with the first wave, I thought, oh my word, I need to capture this. And there was just, it was too much. I just couldn't do it. And I have never felt like that, but I think it was that we were that tired and overwhelmed is probably the right word, that I just didn't. And then when just before the second wave and we were going back again, I said to Sheena, I will have to take photos. What do we need to have permission, or how are we doing this? And it was a very much kind of like, you know, how do we do this? And it was like, yeah, we need to do this. So we just, you know, ask everybody's permission every time I took a photo. There's no patients involved or anything like that. So it was very discreet all the time when the photo was taken. And I was on shift, so it wasn't like I was going in and take photos. I was on shift and I would literally have the camera with me. And if there was a moment, I would snap something and run back and do my job again. You know,
was it a camera or a camera phone? Was it a camera?
SLR. So I would have thought actually with a mobile phone, I could have taken more and quicker.
Not having a go at you.
Thinking back, sometimes it is the quickest, isn't it? But yeah, it was always there.
Paul, sorry to interrupt. They're not allowed mobile phones in clinical areas.
Oh, right. See, that's right. Yeah, fair enough. I'll cut that bit out.
I'm not saying they're never in there, but, you know, we don't.
Yeah. No, good point.
Yeah. Good point. Petra.
No, not at all. So the photos was only from the second wave that I'm kind of very in hindsight. You know, I wish I took, because it would have been, I think, because it became the norm. In the second wave, we knew what was happening. We knew what we would, you know, what to expect in a way. And it was different, but yet the same. So it kind of became the norm. Anyway, what I was going to try and say is, like, every time I like to catch them without them always seeing that I'm taking the photo, and then afterwards they'll say, but I didn't smile, or I smiled but you can't see with a mask. And I'm like, you can't see you smiling, you know, your eyes are saying a lot.
Yeah.
And people don't realize always that. But I think from what we've done to, like, relax and support each other, the support was again immense, because we were all in it together. So there was that camaraderie. And it was very much like, you know, one day I would be like down in the bottom or whatever and feel like, I can't do this. I cannot physically do this anymore. Emotionally, you're drained. You just had enough. And like you say, the rest of the world were carrying on. You know, it was lockdown. People were having nice days in the sun, whatever. We were just like, you know, on your off days, you literally didn't have the oomph to do anything. You would just sit there and stare at the TV or whatever. You just couldn't do anything. Mm. But then everybody felt like that. So we weren't alone. So I think what helped us is if somebody was that down on a shift or anything, because you've seen so much things that you've never experienced, you know, the emotional side of it. We were so much supporting each other. So one day it's me that's feeling like that, and the rest will support, or somebody else tomorrow, and then you there for them again. So it was very much a sharing. It's kind of like, you know, it's your crew, so you look after each other. And I think that goes without saying, like Sheena said, this was way before the pandemic. It is just one big mean machine, and everybody just look after each other. It's just in you. And I think you can't work in a pressured area like that without being like that. There was a lot of young staff that's never seen so much. I'm in my 50s now, so, you know, I see myself as an old seasoned, you know, nurse, if you like. But these young ones in their 20s, I just take my hat off to them. Because, you know, some of them started in this pandemic as new nurses. And I just said, if you can do this, you can do anything.
Yeah.
You know, they were absolutely amazing. And they will be fantastic nurses throughout their career because they've done this. So I think from us oldies, if you like, it was very much supporting all those as well. But then to see them doing what they did as well, you know, gave us the courage to carry on, where you think, like, I can't do this. I keep saying, many chefs, I say, I'm too old for this. I can't do this. I'm too old for this. you know, but then you pull each other through. So I think a lot of people think, you know, yeah, how did you do it? But it's, for us, it wasn't about, we just did it. It wasn't the question. It was, you have to do it and you get on with it. And then we will put a lot of talking to each other, I think, as well.
Yeah.
You know, and share emotions, share a bad shift. We did, like, loads of sharing of, you know, remember that day, remember that shift. And what encouraged us, obviously, is patients getting better and patients coming back or hear or see photos of people that's done well. All the things, you know, when patients go to the ward, we clap them all out. Unfortunately, wave one, very sad, but we didn't have many people that survived from our ICU. And that was just soul destroying, to be honest. Mm. The second wave, much more people going to the ward. It is just even one patient just leaving, you know, make our year. It's that feeling of not just achievement, but like, you know, we were those people, those patients, family, while their family couldn't be here. Remember, there's no visiting or anything like that. We are there for them, and you can show empathy and sympathy, and you do everything you've been taught in your whole life as a nurse, but this was something else, and you couldn't feel like you're not doing enough for patients to be there for them, because their families aren't there, so you were their family as well as their nurse, and you're rooting for every single patient that's there. So yeah, I'm going on and on now, but
no, I mean. Yeah. Listen, we saw, everyone saw, I mean, my dad was in hospital. I can't remember if it was the first wave or the second wave. He's got myeloma and he had a bit of a setback with it. But we couldn't visit, but no, it was the second lockdown. It was the second lockdown. And it just makes you think that, I mean, you know, we didn't think he was going to come out. He's not great now, but he's not that bad.
Yeah.
But you put yourself in that, in the situation where it's like, if the worst was to happen, mm-hmm. and I don't think you can't learn that. So, and I'm sure, and this is what I'm, you know, we want for the charity and I want for my boys and my family is to learn from other people. I'm sure that the newer nurses learn loads and loads and loads from you guys. Mm-hmm. And vice versa, learning stuff from them. And that's it's the worst possible situation, but that's the way it should be. It should be everyone helping each other out and doing what they need to do.
Do you know what we learned as well, though, Paul? Just the kindness of other people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we had this overwhelming support, incoming support, and even... Petrol's took photos. She can show you the photos of our staff room. Like, you couldn't see a piece of the wall because it was full of pictures that children had
rainbows
drawn, and rainbows. And
yeah.
You know what? And just messages from people.
And that and, does have no end.
That's just like...
unbelievable.
Never experienced anything like that either.
Well, back in when it was April and that, I said to Kate, she come home and she said, oh, we've got free pizza, we've had coffee, we've had the...
Mm.
I says, what can we do? You know, we've got contacts, me and Paul, and through the charity and stuff. What do you really need? She said, we're actually fed up of cakes and stuff like that. She said, we need a hand moisturizer because of the sanitizer was making their hands rough.
Mm-hmm,
And she said, and my face, everyone's face is sore from the masks and stuff like that. So it was actually right on the nick of time because L'Oreal actually was closing down. But they managed to send us two crates full of hand moisturizer and moisturizing face masks.
We never looked better, did we?
It was delivered to my front gate and I had to carry all these boxes in. But we got them to three or four hospitals in Manchester. And then the next one was, we're showering that off in my air. I need air conditioner and things like that. So, again, we got onto L'Oreal. They delivered a load of hair conditioner for us. So, I mean, that was only a little bit, you know, of what...
Yeah, all of that helps. The morale, it boosted.
Oh, it was great. There was a bartering system. There was a nurse that I know over in Christie's, and I dropped a load of moisturiser and stuff off for her to take into work. And she said, we've got a load of biscuits from McVitie's, and she gave me them to take to Macclesfield. So it was like... this black market of passing goods around to help the hospitals. But I love that kind of stuff. To me, that's proper Greater Manchester sort of, you know, if you're throwing something out, don't throw it out. See if somebody else needs it, you know, and pass things around. And that's how it should be. Do you know what I mean? But it's fantastic to hear that people actually supported you and that helped, you know.
Yeah. And we put, I don't know, I think everybody ended up doing it in the end. You know, we put a call out for crocheted hearts. We ended up with thousands.
Yeah.
Thousands.
Yeah.
Have you got a market stall now selling blankets?
We
we've got bereavement blankets. We recently put a call out for bereavement blankets, mm-hmm. actually.
Did you?
And we've had deliveries from just people dropping, just people bringing them in with through the nose, you know, staff bringing them in.
If there's anything you ever need, whether it's for the staff as well as, you know, for the patients or anything else, always give us a shout and we'll do whatever we can. I mean, I can't promise it, but we'll certainly try. Oh, you know what I mean?
That's great.
Oh, that's really good.
What's, before this on ICU, did you, would people send things into you? I mean, obviously when people have been in,
yeah,
and you've done an amazing job, I'm sure you got chocolates and the stuff sent back. Did you ever get anything that was you weren't expecting? So you'd be there one day and someone would say, "Well, someone's just turned up with a load of whatever," because they think you're doing a great job. Or did that never happen?
I can't recall anything odd. But what the patients would get to know that the nurses like to drink coffee. Fresh coffee. So often it would be like gift packs of coffee and biscuits and just sort of refreshment type things.
So any coffee companies listening to this podcast?
Coffee, yeah. Yeah.
What about like cars? Do either of you need a car? New car? Put that in as well. And gin, Manchester gin. They've always got samples. So where do you, I mean, do you see yourself, I mean, God, this sounds like a bit of a, do you see yourself finishing your career in ICU or do you, I mean, and this is quite a loaded question, I suppose. I mean, because I'm sure a lot of people may have got to the point where they've just thought, I've seen enough.
Yeah.
And for all the positive stuff that we do,
yeah,
I've seen so much negative stuff and I need to go out and do something else, career change.
Yeah. I think there's probably, we'll always have that little cohort in the team who, you know, they might be considering pre-pandemic this in normal times. I think for some, it might have just tipped them over and to make that decision.
Yeah.
And they've gone off to, still in nursing, but to do other types of nursing. I mean, I'm ICU through and through, so. I'll always be
coming
on to
the dark side,
are you? Yeah, I'll never go to the dark side, Petra. You know that.
Are you back in the IT side now, Petra?
I am, yeah. I went back when April. Yeah, so not long back.
What's more frustrating, ICU or dealing with IT? Is what you can't do in ICU is turn it off and turn it back on again.
Oh, wow. That's the thing, isn't it? It's the it's very different, you know, in many ways, because it's making things obviously better for colleagues, you know, and having digital solutions and artificial intelligence built into systems so we can help and escalate and do things better and plan for the future and, you know, all transformation and everything, because obviously healthcare is moving quite fast and it has actually in this last year. So my team that stayed behind, a lot of things, you know, all the clinics, virtual clinics and things like that has moved on significant over this last year because we had to. So in a way that's done, really a big boost for digital healthcare, if you like, and there's so much more to do. And it's always money, obviously. It's the NHS after all, so, you know, but we have moved on significantly. It is I enjoyed the hands-on. I always have. But the circumstances were so different this time, obviously, with everything going on. And many days, like I said, you know, you just say, I can't do this anymore. Everybody, the people that still work there now and everybody. And it was kind of like, but you still had that satisfaction at the end of the shift, regardless of how long and how bad your shift was, because it's like, you know, 12 and a half hour days if you, or nights if you do a shift. So once you're in there, you just get on with it. But regardless of how bad it was or whatever happened that day, there's always positive things, you know, to take home. You even just holding a patient's hand or facilitating a video call with the relatives or whatever that might be, or your patient has improved slightly or whatever else, makes you have that kind of like, you know, yes, I've done a good job today. And you always get that satisfaction from a clinical point of view, where I don't get that every day in my job. That's quite frustrating. And I've just realized it maybe a bit more going back. You know, it's projects, it's things that takes weeks and months to, you know, and eventually it goes live and makes things better or whatever. But it takes time. Where on shift, it's quick and it's quick. You can't, you know, it's not, yes, it takes weeks to get a patient better, for instance. But at every shift, you get that satisfaction that I don't always get in this job.
But data, though, I mean, it seems to have been a big part of driving what we've done and what we haven't done. And I'm sure it's like, you know, the first wave, like you said, you know, I don't, you know, it just came as a complete thick bolt out the blue, and you know what they were, what people were treated with, what worked, what didn't work, and then the second wave, they knew a little bit better and stuff like that. And it's the same with, I think, the digital side. So, you know, we are improving, or people like yourself are improving the situation. So hopefully that doesn't happen again. But when something does happen, you know, we've learned and you've put that back into the system, and it will save more people's lives. I mean, that's the only thing that you can.
Well, it gives choice as well, doesn't it? I mean, it's, we've been forced into a situation. I mean, we have in the charity sector yourselves. But moving forward, is that the digital solutions, you know, we can run, we can reach people through our online workshops that we could never have got into an actual face-to-face session.
Yeah.
So it's opened up loads of opportunity to actually help and reach more people.
Yeah.
You know, and it's made things more efficient. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of businesses that won't even be going back to a building.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, so that if, you know, those developments that you're talking about within the healthcare sector, and I know a lot of people were using iPads and phones to keep people in touch with family, and that, you know, that connection is a major part of getting better.
Definitely. So that was one of the things, I think, that we got, Sheena, wasn't it? The iPads. We got it donated. I think it was from the council, from Wigan Council.
Yeah, and we started the letters to loved ones service across the hospital.
Right, and that's still going now.
Yeah. What's that? Sorry.
So it's letters to a loved one. So a relative will submit a message via email to a generic email address, and a team within the hospital will then get that message to that patient wherever they are in the hospital, and the nurse will read it out with them or whatever.
So that's on any ward, any.
Anywhere across the hospital for an inpatient,
That's a brilliant idea.
Yes, we never had that before. And also
pictures, they could send, you know, they can send photos, and then it gets printed off, like Sheena said, at one office. And they were there every day, even weekends. Somebody would go and they will deliver it to us on the unit. And that was one thing that was extremely emotional, reading those things to the patients. I wouldn't lie, that was tough. Because people pour their hearts out, I think, because you're typing, you know, it in a message. It's different than saying it to somebody. Yeah. So they would say more than they would say normally, I think.
Oh, the art of letter writings, but, you know, if that's returning, fantastic, because there's nothing better than receiving a postcard or a letter of someone. Exactly. Well, except when I used to go on holiday and send the same worded one to my mum every year. Get it out of the way. Just send it now. We usually got back before the postcard did anyway. Well, that letter writing, I mean, especially with more and more healthcare becoming centralised. I mean, in Manchester, there used to be three or four different children's hospitals. Now there's the main one. Now, initially, it was like, I was totally against that. But having been there with family, you're like, wow, you've got all this expertise within one building. And you can see that that's a better solution. Although it's more difficult to go and visit and things like that. But if there's these other creative sort of aspects of to keep people connected, then that doesn't matter anymore. You know, wasting time driving there, trying to find car parking, costing a fortune and everything else. Whereas you can click on a screen or you can send an email. You can do that. You know, that's so easy.
What you're basically saying is you don't have to go visit people in hospital now. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, mate, are the same years putting in that life.
Out. Damien doesn't want any visitors if he ends up in hospital.
Tell you what, mate, if I was in hospital, I don't.
I think what it has proven absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt, and I know they talk about it with medicine and, you know, we'll have robots and we'll have, you know, this will be automated and that's automated. A robot can't hold somebody's hand. You know, you don't, you know, that touch. And you were probably the only people, and you can see it in the pictures, you were probably the only people who were hugging and being able to hug because you were all kitted up. So, you know, you could get that. I mean, that's the least that, you know, you guys deserved, is that you could give each other a hug.
And that was powerful because I was just very lucky again to have that moment, because that was a real deep moment. And they were crying before that. And just as I was taking, they were smiling because the hug did what it needed to do. Because it was a very tough shift for one of the nurses. And, you know, she's lost a few patients in a week on every shift that she had. And it was just a moment to, and I could tell you a story about every single picture I took because I know what happened at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's helping me as from a well-being point. I think that's helped me to do these photos because I felt like I gave back to the people as well, because they would have never had those photos anyway. You know, so for them, it means something. So when they look, they can relate back how bad it was, and actually you're okay, you've come through it and all that.
And I think so Petro, I think it's fair to say the staff, they want the photos, don't they?
They've
got copies of the photo booklet and everything.
Everybody
wanted to be a part of it pretty much, didn't they?
Yes. They were very, and I mean, obviously a photo is nothing without the people in it. So for me, it was great because everybody was like, you know, yes, sometimes they would say, really, when the camera comes out again. But then, you know, they were just, I was like, just carry on, do what you do. You know, but it's the simple things that they think they, it's just their job again. But that will be, you can see the amount of people around one patient, you know, how much it takes to look after ICU patient. And I don't think people realize all that because it's very much behind closed doors. Unless you've been a patient or a relative visiting a patient in ICU, I don't think people realize, you know, what goes on.
I didn't. I mean, I think you think that someone goes in there and they're in the bed and they're all hooked up.
Yeah.
But
and they're asleep.
I'm sure it gets
and
to
the
that.
Nurse is reading a book at the side of the bed while the patient's asleep.
That's what they think.
Yeah.
Interestingly, so even before COVID, it's a locked unit. Our doors are locked, you know. You can't just walk on an intensive care unit. So you're only on an intensive care unit if you've got a reason to be there. So people do not know, you know, colleagues across the hospital have no experience of it. That's not a criticism.
Mm.
And as a team, we're very self-sufficient. And ordinarily, our doors are shut and our team, we manage what we need to manage. And we manage it very well, actually.
Yeah.
But what this did, this experience did was
it
almost opened the doors to everybody.
And
because we had an influx of staff redeployed who didn't.
Oh.
Oh, we've just lost you, Sheena.
Was she talking too much, Paul? Have you kicked her off?
No. It's like that. What was she called? Who works for the town council? That was an odd. She's just chopping everyone up. No, I think just the connection there, but
yeah, maybe
shut
the back.
No, that's I mean, it's always good, and I know you wouldn't think like this, but sometimes it is good for people to know what you actually do.
I think it definitely is. Yeah,
the amount of work that you do, it's a really good thing. And I know you as a group of people, you wouldn't sort of push this, but I think it's really good for people to know what you actually do within the hospital, because you know you will get that kind of, oh yeah, they've got it, you're just sat there drinking coffee, you know, switching a few. And I'm sure people think like that.
Yeah, I think it's the one-to-one nursing. People don't understand what one-to-one nursing means. Yeah. They think, what, you only have one patient. But they forget these patients are the sickest patients in the hospital. And they are literally on, you know, a lot of machines, hooked up onto a lot of machines. And the nurses are experts in what they do. And they basically manage everything for that patient. You know, it is the ventilator, but you need to know what you're doing with the ventilator. And you need to interpret blood gases, what we call blood gases. That's certain, you literally take a blood sample, you interpret it and change the settings on ventilators for that. They're on a lot of drugs that needs maintaining all the time. You can't let it run out because some of it keeps the patient asleep. The patient will literally wake up if you are not on top of everything and you don't have it all running all the time at certain rates. And there's a lot of things going on, you know. It is kidney machines and all sorts of things that's happening. So people don't realize that. But with the dilution of staff, because we weren't enough staff, trained ICU nurses, we did go up to a ratio of 1-3.
Right.
So one nurse with 3 ICU patients. So you could just imagine, I mean, that was quite horrific. We had all the support staff that came, but from different areas that's never worked in ICU. We had them, we called them buddies. So again, take my hat off to all of them that came to help us. Lots of theatre staff, nurses that's been scrub nurses in theatres for 25 years, some of them, never worked on a ward ever, and then been literally thrown into a situation in intensive care. So it was good to open the doors for that reason. And I think we've bonded so much with all the buddies as well. And it was fantastic because we've made, you know, new friends as well for life, because we've all been in this situation together. So it's great to keep in contact with them all as well. So I think
reminds me of, and this is a little bit off the subject, but I've been listening to it. I try and go out for a walk every day, so I've spent tons of money on audiobooks. Listen to a lot of story, you know, like Second World War stuff and soldiers serving and stuff like that. And it's very reminiscent of that, thrown into a situation with people that you don't really know that well. Certainly if other people were coming in and you form these really, really strong relationships really quickly.
Yeah.
And you become family and it's that kind of unbreakable, it's like serving together, that unbreakable bond. I mean, you don't get that if you work in insurance.
You don't get that in
very other than, I think, the services, you know, whether it be the, and I class the NHS as a service as much as the police service and everything else, but we've served together.
And I
don't think you'll ever lose that.
In the beginning, because they didn't, you know, it was like you redeployed. Theatres closed. It was emergency theatres, you know, carrying on for emergency operations. But as you know, there's now all these long waiting lists for normal operations, if you like. So all of those patients have been on waiting lists forever now. But those staff that work in theatres every single day, and we have 3 hospitals in Wigan, Wrightington and Lee. So our Wrightington hospital is the orthopaedic hospital, and we do a lot of, well, it's orthopaedic surgery. It's one of the leading hospitals in the country. So a lot of those staff, most of them came to help us in ICU. Just such a mammoth task that we all had. And to gel with each other, you've never seen these people in your life. You don't know them. They don't know us. They don't know the unit. They don't know the patients. They don't work with patients like that. You know, it's the theatres. And all there's some ward staff. There's people from every, we had specialist pain nurses, you know, clinics and things that stopped. Those people were redeployed as buddies. So never in their life they thought they would work there. Stoma nurses, you name it. There was all sorts of different background. They're specialists in their areas and then thrown into this alien unit, if you like.
Have any of those nurses come on full time to ICU? Yes. Have they changed what they've been doing and come into ICU?
Yes, immediately. And I think that was like kind of part of the shock, you know, just thrown in, because it was like Sheena said before, we were watching Italy, and we were about 3-4 weeks behind Italy. Yeah. And then it was London first, and when it hit London, I think we saw it's actually here, you know. Mm. So again, we were a bit behind London, but when it hit us, it was just, you could have not prepared yourself. So all those people didn't know what hit them, because, you know, I can't even imagine how they have felt. But now, when everybody now have, you know, go back to their respective substance post, if you like, it's like, oh gosh, all right, okay, it's over. You know, we should all jubilate and say, right, you know, it's good news. But nobody felt like that. It was a very strange feeling. I think some people don't understand that we're not overexcited about it. We're like, of course, we're happy that COVID is under control, but it's not about that. It's, you know, we've lost. It felt like you've lost something, but you don't know what. And I think it's that camaraderie feeling. One of the guys actually, he described it quite perfect. He said, I should feel like I've won, you know, a lottery ticket, but I don't. By going back to his area, and he's like, yeah, but why is that? And he was like, I don't know, because I'm going to miss working so close. And we just got on. We literally just got on.
That is really, really interesting.
Yeah, Gina, apart from an amazing photographer in your ranks, what other creatives have you got in your team, in the ICU?
Oh, gosh, I think there will be quite a few. I'm thinking that lots of them do, like, keen exercise people, you know, like running marathons, climbing mountains, do all sorts. There's a group of them, I think, before COVID, that they did the Three Peaks and things like that. So there's all sorts of, there's a lot of talent, I think.
I mean, you must have the class comedian.
Oh, there's always some of them. Gina might be one of them.
Oh, so
we can't hear you there, Sheena. No.
We lost her. I think she was trying to do on her phone and check if she's messaging.
I like it when she hovers in front of that tree and it looks like her hair's gone wild.
Well, that tree is actually another story. That's she's put that as a background. We've got that tree. It's a big canvas. And one of the nurses in ICU, she's one of the sisters that worked there permanently. Her nephew is a tattoo artist in Liverpool.
Right.
And she asked, oh, she's back now. Can you hear us, Sheena? I don't think she can. So Kathy, is her name, she asked her nephew to draw this tree on a canvas, and all those little leaves that you can see was the beginning of everybody's fingerprints.
Oh, is that right?
Well, the staff.
So all the staff, the bodies included. So the tree is just a photo that Gina's got as a background. The tree is now complete. So all the leaves are on now, and it's everybody's fingerprints. In, I think it's three different colors we've used. He's gave us all the paint. So everybody just, I've got a few photos. I've got one of me actually putting my finger prints on.
Quite that's emotional. Really, really beautiful.
That, yeah, it is.
That's made me really emotional, that.
Funny enough, when I worked in the homeless sector, I suggested that they do that in one of the homeless hostels, that whenever anybody moved on, you know, to their own accommodation or a better life, that they created a leaf to stick on the tree.
Yeah.
You know, so that they left something of themselves there. And as the tree, as the more leaves were put on the tree was growing and showing that people were going to better situations. So I love the whole idea of that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So it's
handy
for you.
Yeah. Can I just say that again? Sorry, Sheena.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Stop shouting. No, we were just Petro was just telling us about the tree in the background, and
that's my work Zoom background.
That's a really, really brilliant idea.
You need to update it one, Sheena, because that's only the beginning one, isn't it? I'll need to send you the final one.
Yeah.
Have you got a series of photos as the tree's grown?
I've got a few. I think about, not a lot. I think about 3-4. I'll have to dig them out to see.
Could you send us? I mean, is it something that you would share? I would love to share that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think one of our things. We've got it anyway. I'll dig it out.
So you're going to have that tattooed all over your back? Is that the plan?
Yeah. People actually said,
I do that, actually. Right there.
I know. Some people have said, if you have a tattoo, what would it be? And everybody was like kind of thinking, you know, people that wanted tattoos because they were all wanting to go to this guy that's done the tree because he's a tattoo artist. Yeah. So I won't be surprised, but I haven't heard that anybody is doing any kind of...
I think there's a few people who said they were going to have the tree of life.
Yeah.
But
I don't think anybody have done it yet.
No.
So the photographs that you've actually taken, and obviously photography is a big thing for you. Mm-hmm. Where are you taking that? What plans have you got for the photographs that you've got, but also photography as a hobby, a career?
Well, I would have loved to do it as a career, to be honest, but I don't think I have the guts to do it. So I just do it as a hobby. And like the ICU photos, I've got about, I don't even know, I think it's way over 2,000 that I took in this second wave. And some of them, you know, they're all different, but some of them are kind of the same, if you like, same situations, but different scenarios, different people. And we, in the beginning, it was kind of like, what will we do with this? And we haven't really decided yet. There was talk, the comms team at the hospital are wanting to maybe do some other exhibition in the hospital of it, a few of them. So I've got a meeting somewhere in the future to talk about that. So I'm not sure what we're doing with that yet. But we were thinking in the beginning maybe of doing some other book or some sort, you know.
I'm just going to say a book, yeah.
Get a copy. But I haven't looked into it, to be honest. I think I've downloaded one thing that was blurb or something like that. Where you can print your own books and stuff, but I haven't actually looked into it. It seems a big project, if you like. I'll have to look into it. So I haven't done anything with it. We're sharing it on Twitter, and every person that's on a photo has got the copy of their own photos. They've all got a copy of the tree. Everybody wanted that, and I've made my own little canvas of mine. So it's quite cute. I haven't done anything else with it yet. So any suggestions?
If you put that tree out as a print, you'd definitely raise funds for the ward without a doubt. Thanks. You know, and if you need any help with that, contact us and we'll certainly support you in doing that if that's something you're interested in.
Yeah, thank you.
But after the brief chats we've had on Twitter and that about, what was it, the best hugs, PPE hugs are the best. This morning I actually sat down and I thought, we've got to write a piece of spoken word. We've got to write a poem around that. So I was sat there this morning and I was trying to work out, I was trying to get it done for tonight, to be honest, because I had an idea of doing a small video with some of the photographs and then the spoken word piece with it. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be me that was saying it because I'm rubbish, but we've got actors and things like that that are far better than I am.
We've actually got poems. I have a machine from that one of the nurses wrote.
Oh, yeah.
We've got two poems, I think.
Three poems she's written about the
experience. Absolutely beautiful.
Well, yeah. If she's interested in sharing those again, you know, if she wants to do that now or a later date. I mean, I'm sure for a lot of people they've got all sorts of things where it's just not right for them.
Yeah,
to do
we shared
it
on Twitter before.
I think we have shared it on Twitter. So the thing is, our work Twitter page. It's only gone a bit mad since we started putting Petro's photos on, because when Petro started taking the photos, we didn't do anything with them, did we, Petro, really? Until, I can't even remember when we started
No, it started kind of just like, shall we put some on? And then we decided 100 days in a way. And then
So it's like, well, should we put this one on? I'll tweet this one and I'll say this and shall I tweet this one? And then it ended up being we were going to share some photos to share in a photos for 100 days.
And then we panicked because we thought, oh my goodness, what do we put in for 100 days?
we had to try and put the theme with every day, you see. But it was never meant to be 100 days. But interestingly, people were looking forward to it and the anticipation of what they're going to be sharing today, because they would also be shared on Facebook as well. Yeah. So and people would comment, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
I think people want a bit of what you guys have got. I think that's what it is as well. I think there's that, like I said, that camaraderie thing and that, massively impressed by what people have done in really, adverse circumstances. And I think there is that some where people think, oh yeah, I'd love to be involved in that. I'm sure they wouldn't on a day-to-day basis, but,
part of that team, you mean?
To be part of that team. And I think that's, I mean, the thing with Twitter is it's just so it's there and then it's gone.
Yeah.
And that's good in grabbing somebody's attention and then trying to do something else. But when you've got something like this.
Yeah, it's disposable just putting them on Twitter. I mean, Ivy, you were saying earlier that you could tell a story for each of them photos. Mm. It's those stories. I mean, it's a big part of what we do is about the legacy, about the festival is the start of the process, not the end. It's it's making these connections and how can we move forward together and can we support other groups, other charities, that's what we're doing. We're creating that foundation and the platform for it. But I'd really love to hear, I mean, I've looked at the photos every time you've put them on and I'm making up my own stories, which is great, but I'd love to have some context because, like you say, that photograph is so much more going on, how you do that, how you want to do that, more importantly, because we insist that we never take over, we just support, it's your work, it's your...
You do take over, that's a lie.
Well, only you. Only
you do take over. I know you mean it in a nice way, but I mean it goes back to how we started it. People need to remember what's happened. Not necessarily you, Gat, but other people need to be aware of what you've gone through and what has happened, and that would be a great way of doing it with those stories.
It's that social commentary. It's social history. Yeah. It's the narrative. Yeah.
I think that was my thing in the beginning. It was like, and I think you mentioned today as well, and on Twitter, Damien, about the 1918 Spanish flu. And that was my kind of thing. We always look at photos of history events and war photos and whatever else. And you think, well, somebody took it. Now, if somebody takes a photo of a newly built house, they don't think anything of it. But in 100 years, it will be history. And my idea was exactly that, so I've got a lot of photos that's just of a ventilator or a syringe pump where we give the drugs through, because those things have evolved over the years, in our lifetime, never mind in 100 years or whatever. So we look back at all the iron lungs and everything they used then and laugh about it and like, oh my goodness, look at that and look at this. But even the ventilators that I've used when I started, oh my goodness, it's nothing like we have now. Mm. And then you just obviously evolve with it, but it's all part of history. So I think it is important for me. Well, it was certainly, capture that history because it's history in the making. We are the history. We're doing it. We're making it now. And it's certainly not over yet. And hopefully, we're in a better position now, all the numbers and things going up again. But it's history. And
it's an important part of history.
Yeah.
Well, every generation has their struggle or their fight or whatever. And, my grandparents went through the war and the trauma and things they wouldn't talk about and things they would. I mean, we've been lucky in that respect that, I'm 51 now and, there's been spats and was away from here, but not in this country. But then this comes, and like you say, that it's. I've looked into the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic and how it devastated Manchester and Greater Manchester and things like that. I mean, you know, as well as everywhere else. And there's so many parallels, but you look at back then at how poverty was a massive influence in how that developed. And it still is poverty now, and it is still, you know, there's those communities that have been hard hit are the areas that are destitute, you know. Yeah. So there are, there's a lot of parallels to take from it, and there's lessons to be learned as well.
Definitely.
Listen, I'm conscious of the fact that we've kept you talking for ages, but it's been, I mean, I love the pictures. I absolutely love the pictures. I think they're brilliant. I can't put into, and I know I said this, and I genuinely meant, I don't think there is enough thank yous that anyone can say for what you guys have done. And all we want to do is do whatever we can to kind of show people that, and I think they'll definitely get it from listening to you guys on here, is the people behind the masks. I mean, that sounds really thingy, doesn't it? But it is that, because all you've seen is like, you know, the eyes. And stuff, and there's a lot more behind it, and that's what people need to realise in it, and hopefully that means that they'll, you know, maybe change a little bit and not be as horrible.
For me as well, thank you for being social on social, you know, because we've done one of these festivals before in Trafford. We've got a lot of engagement there, mainly from young carers and carers over it there. We've done it in Wigan, and it, as we're doing another two in Bury and Stockport over the next year. And it's fantastic for us that different people sort of get it, you know, and join in, and the conversations. And I know it's only a brief thing on Twitter, you know, sharing a few comments and liked. But the way that you're, you know, I'm getting people like following me, like the radiologist from Leicester and things like that. I was like, what's going on here? But people are obviously seeing it, and people are enjoying it, and people are actually joining in the conversation. And that's thanks to you. You know, that's, the discussions are as important as putting on the photographs, because that's, like you say, that's the connection, you know.
Yeah. The thing I want to say really is, so obviously Petros, you know, I would tweet the photos and we'd agree and discuss things. But for me, it's all about celebrating. It's not my team, it's our team. Mm. It's all about celebrating and showcasing the fantastic team. That's all I've got to say, really.
See, our job's done, Paul. Sheena gets it, gets what we've done with the festival. Yeah. It's about exactly that. Showcasing amazing people in our Greater Manchester communities that are doing fantastic stuff and going above and beyond that added value that people talk about, you know. But it's also,
it's not all gloom and doom. I mean, it was. But there is a lot of positivity out there. And a lot of people are, you know, won't shout about it because they just won't shout about it. And others because they're not that au fait with the best way of doing it. Yeah. And me and Damien have got big gobs. So we'll shout as loud as we can and knock as many doors down as we can so that, you know, that so that people get recognised. But anyway, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you. And it would be lovely to get down there one day. And I know we can't come on the unit. That's with the last two people you want.
Well, I'm doing my best to avoid ICU as much as possible at the moment. Yeah. I'm on a diet.
Just check it out. We have to walk around with a defib anyway, don't we? We just in case. But listen, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, take care. It's been a pleasure.
No, it's great meeting you. You know, this is the beauty of these things, where it starts with a link, a hashtag, then leads to a conversation. Now we're seeing you on Zoom and having this opportunity. And like I say, we're always here. If there's anything you want to do with your own creativity.
Yeah.
And also, Sheena, if your staff need anything from us, if you want us to do some sessions, or you want us to get involved in an event, or you're doing a end of year awards thing and you want some actors, comedians, I don't just mean me.
I'll tell you, Damien, the team are planning a huge party to do so with the ICU team and all the redeployed staff.
Okay.
That is on the cards. Hopefully at the end, towards the end of the year, but whenever it is safe to do that,
we'll let us know, and we'll see what we can arrange. So have a good night. I'm going to watch United win the proper European Championship now.
Oh, it's the football on tonight, Paul.
Yeah.
All right. I'm looking forward to Saturday's match, personally.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
So you can put any of my estimations anyway. So I'm
a Liverpool. Why? Who do you follow?
Liverpool.
It says it on a bio. I've actually read that, but I didn't want to go there.
Liverpool.
Yeah. Sorry.
Right, well, have a good night anyway.
Well, it wasn't in the beginning, they said.
Oh, no, thanks for your time.
No, I loved it.
And I might get this horribly wrong. Is it Tutsins?
Is it what?
Is it, my partner used to live in South Africa. I think, is it Tutsins? Is that how you say it? Is that see you later?
Tutsins, yeah.
That sounded the same as what
I was worried then, thinking she's done what I would do. And she said, no, just if you ever meet someone from South Africa, say this word to them.
Oh, no.
I still love it.
Normally and, swear and words, she, isn't it?
I know them words gone, as well, Paul, but I'm not saying them.
All right, have a good evening.
Oh, thanks,
thank you. It was lovely to see you.
Okay, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.